Hello, and once again, welcome to Minbar. I'm your host, Ahmed Hanif. Now, everyone has some idea of what a good deed is, and everyone, to some extent, believes that we should perform good deeds. Indeed, one of the criticisms against religion is that it does not have a monopoly on good deeds, and that the good deeds that religion espouses could, in fact, be bad for society. For example, animal rights activists might see the ritual slaughter of animals to be a bad deed, or feminists might object to hijab for women, when Muslims might see them as good. On the other hand, a Muslim might see drinking alcohol to be a bad deed, whilst Christians might see it as something good if done with moderation. So, are good deeds relative, as materialists would like to have it, or are good deeds absolute, regardless of the time and place they are performed? What we want to do today is to explore the idea of amal as-salih, or good deeds in the Islamic perspective, and find out what Islam has to say about this with our guest, Sheikh Safiullah Khan. Sheikh Safiullah, once again, welcome to Minbar. Now, all societies and religions believe in doing good deeds. So what makes Islamic view so different?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the beneficent, the merciful. Peace be upon to you and all the listeners. It's happy to be with you once again on Minbar. I think, let me firstly start by saying that it's not the Islamic view. It's not a view amongst other views, but rather it's an Islamic science. It is based on a theory and a practical aspect to it. When we look at good deeds in Islam, naturally, it's based on upon our belief in Allah, in the unseen, and the deeds that we performed is based on this belief that we have. What we have is that the belief naturally sketches the diaphragm, or rather it draws the perimeter wherein we need to action, where we need to function. Mm-hmm. And so good deeds,
Islam draws the parameters where we could practice good deeds.
Yes, I think it's a relationship between the body and the soul. Mm-hmm. The soul is rather the belief system that we have, and the body is the actions that we practice as Muslims.
Right, right. So with respect to the other points of view on good deeds, what is different between them and the Islamic point of view? Let's say, for example, a materialist, a non-religious person's idea of a good deed, and a Muslim's idea of a good deed. What's the difference? Say, for example, let's say you have a poor person, and a person who doesn't believe in God thinks that giving money to this poor person or giving him help is a good deed, and he does it. A Muslim comes along and he does the same thing. What's the difference between these two actions?
Well, I think let me take you a bit back. There's quite a few things that you have brought up here. Firstly, the difference is naturally good deeds in Islam is based on the concept of belief that we have. That firstly, we believe, and the belief system itself is what, like I said, creates that perimeter for action. Let me also say that religion, not necessarily Islam, but religion itself did not establish good deeds. Religion rather encouraged good deeds. Good deeds is something instinctive to human nature. So you find all the religions have encouraged good deeds. In fact, when we look at Islam and we look at the Quran, there are two types of commands in the Quran. We have the what we refer to as the Amrun Irshadi, the command that is encouraging, and we have the command that is establishing. When it comes to the command that is encouraging, like I said, good deeds, because it's instinctive to human nature, the Quran encourages us to do good deeds. And similarly for other religions. So you can see the how important it is for, not necessarily a Muslim, but rather for a human being to be good. And then you have the command that establishes certain actions that did not exist before Islam. For example, the way we pray, the way we fast. It may have existed before Islam, but not in the way that we have it today. So firstly, Islam encourages good deeds, meaning that it is instinctive to human nature. So for a Muslim to be bad should be rather very difficult. Mm-hmm. Instinctively, you're supposed to be doing good. Secondly, your religion encourages you to do good. So it's finding a Muslim that is doing bad is supposed to be something non-existent in human society, in Muslim society.
Right.
Secondly, the difference between the act of a non-Muslim and a Muslim. Every act has two aspects to it. There's the act, there's the aspect that's related to the act itself, and the aspect that's related to the doer. When it comes to the act, like you said, the act itself could be good, whether it's a non-Muslim that's doing it or it's a Muslim that's doing it. Right? So, for example, we agree that this act is good, giving food to the poor. The other aspect of the act is related to the doer. We need to look at the intention of the doer, because what counts, we believe in the year after, we believe in the accountability. What counts in the year after is the intention of your act. It's true, this act is good, whether a Muslim does it or whether a non-Muslim does it. But when we come to the doer, we need to look at the intention of the doer. And I think this is where it differs. The non-Muslim, right, is he building this hospital for the betterment of society, or is he building it for fame? For example, so-and-so built a hospital in this society, or so-and-so did A, B, and C. And I think this is where the difference comes. Similarly, person not believing in Allah, person not believing in the Creator, what's the purpose of his good deed? Is it for show? Is it for fame? It could be numerous of intentions. So,
right. So
that is where the difference comes between a good deed performed by a believer and a good deed performed by a non-believer. We need to look at both components, the aspect related to the deed and the aspect related to the...
Right. What about if the non-believer does a good deed, let's say for society, he isn't doing it for himself, he doesn't care about the fame, he doesn't care about the fortune, he just does it for the essential goodness of that deed, and for the fact that, for example, it could it benefits society. What would be the status of that good deed? Let's say, for example, a Muslim does the same thing. He doesn't do it for God. He doesn't do it for the hereafter. He does it to improve society, to benefit the disenfranchised and so forth. That's it. What is the status of that type of good deed?
Like I said, it is a good deed. Looking at the action itself, it's a good deed. But whether this good deed will hold water in the sight of Allah or in the year after, that's another question. There you got to look at the intention of the doer. The good deed is, it's a good deed.
Right.
But rather, the intention of the doer is also important.
Right.
I think when we look at the essential components of a good deed, it has to be based on belief. Right? Naturally, like I said, belief is what sets the guidelines for good deeds. Secondly, belief also that good deeds are not restricted only to the metaphysical world, to the physical world, but rather it could also be metaphysical. Right? Naturally, it opens the scopes of a wide scope of events or wide scope of activity. But you are not restricted to this world, but rather you could benefit from the unseen world.
Right. So when we talk about the metaphysical aspect, we're talking about the unseen world, the afterlife, heaven, hell, that type of thing.
Exactly. Okay. So your deed is not restricted to this plane of existence. I think when we look at Islam, looking at the Jahiliyyah, the ignorant society that existed before Islam, Islam did not just do away, condemn Jahiliyyah principles and Jahiliyyah values, but it rather put in a new system into place and gave it direction. Now, therefore, when you find in the Quran, تبارك بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم تبارك الذي بيديه الملك, glory be to the one who in his domains is the heavens and the earth, the control of the heavens and the earth, وهو على كل شيء قدير, and he has power over all things, الذي خلق الموت والحياة ليبلوكم أيكم أحسن عملا. He has created life and death in order to see who amongst you is in the best of deeds. You know, this is the criteria that Islam has set about, that the concept of the best of deeds, you know, that we are to compete with one another on the basis of good deeds. And not, Islam did not look at wealth, it did not look at fame, it did not look at your dominance over the world or your control over the world, but rather you should compete with one another in good deeds. So Islam has not just done away with Jahiliyyah, ignorant principles and values, but rather it set a new standard for human society. And what better than to compete in good deeds?
Right. What are the components of good deeds? What is a good deed? What are the criteria by which we can judge a good deed? What's a good deed made up of?
Well, like I said, you know, that belief is fundamental. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at, we have the Surah Al-Asr. By time that Allah takes an oath, by time, Wal Asri innal insana lafi khusr. By time that verily human society or man is at a loss, except those who believe, right, do righteous deeds, enjoin good or enjoin truthfulness, and enjoin perseverance. Now, generally, people look at the first two aspects, the belief and righteous deeds. And, you know, we think that, oh, it's sufficient that you believe and it's sufficient that you do good. You know, we do not look further than that. Yet Islam is saying that human society or man is at a loss except those who believe do good deeds. Yes, that is important. But it goes further than that. It's not restricted to just you being good for yourself. You know, you need to be good for society as well. You need to effect change in society. Therefore, you find belief is individual. Good deeds is individual. But then further than that, look at the beauty of the Quran, that it goes to the social aspect. I mean, enjoining right, enjoining truthfulness cannot be with yourself. It has to be with human society. Right. Enjoining perseverance has to be with human society. It cannot be with yourself. So, on one hand, you have belief and righteous deeds. That's, let's call it Amr al-Saleh. You're a good person. You're a righteous person. But further than that, you need to become a reformer. You need to effect change in society. You got to enjoin truthfulness, righteousness, and you also have to enjoin perseverance. So, on one hand, we need to develop this individual. We need to change, bring about this individual, create this individual who is righteous. But at the same time, this individual has to effect change in society. Mm-hmm. You know, that Islam is for eventually changing, bringing about change in society.
So how do you change this individual? How do you bring about the existence of a person who can do righteous deeds, a righteous person?
Well, look, like, it has to be, again, we're coming back to the fundamentals of belief. Naturally, it has to be based on knowledge, right? We do not believe because of our parents and forefathers and so forth. You know, nor do we believe because we found ourselves born into this religion and therefore we are Muslims. So naturally, you got to discover belief, discover the creator, the concepts of beliefs for yourself, right? You need to deal with these issues yourself. Secondly, the issue of the intention, right? So knowledge is fundamental. Knowledge is fundamental for belief. Belief itself is a necessary component for righteous deeds. Then again, you're looking at having the right intention. Your intention should not be for worldly gain. It should not be for fame. It should not be for people to show off, for people to speak about. It should not make you proud and arrogant and so forth, right? Generally, when we look at the individual, the good that you do has to bring about change in you. You know, if we look on the side of worship in Islam, no matter how much you pray and no matter how much you fast, if it does not change you as an individual, there's no benefit in it. Right? We have a hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, where he says, do not look at the amount of prayer he makes and the amount of fasting that he keeps, but rather look to see to what extent he is truthful to his word. You know, to what extent he fulfills his vows, his commitments. You know, that connection between faith and worship and society, worship and relation with your fellow human beings.
Right.
So, but like I said, coming back to the Surah Al-Asr, you have the individual that is good, that is righteous, but then this individual has to become a reformer in society. You know, therefore, when Islam speaks about change, إن الله لا يغير ما بقوم حتى يغير ما بأنفسهم. Allah does not change in nature, the condition of a people, unless they effect change within themselves. So you have to start with the individual, and from there move to society.
Right.
What's very, very important, you know, and I think this is where many a times we slip up. The nature of evils or evils in society is that it may not affect you now, but eventually you'll become a victim of it. You know, do not think that, oh, you know, nobody in my family takes drugs. Nobody in my family is drinking or smoking or whatever evil may be in society. For example, all right, you know, in our neighborhood, nobody has AIDS. So why should we bother with AIDS?
Right.
This is the mistake that we make. It's a matter of time before you become a victim of AIDS. It's a matter of time before you become a victim of drugs. And we've seen this all the time, you know, that, and therefore Islam takes the position that an evil is an evil. You need to eradicate it from society. It's a cancerous tumor.
Right.
Do not take it lightly. Do not think that, oh, we are protected from AIDS because we are not having uncontrolled sex, we are not having sex out of marriage, we are not A, B, and C, and so forth. No. Today, AIDS is not spreading only through those means. Blood transfusion. How many people have become victims because of blood transfusions? Mm. Not making sure that the source of their blood and so forth, you know? And these are innocent individuals. For example, getting married to a person who has AIDS and you're not aware of it, Muslim or non-Muslim.
Right.
So I think when we come to evils in society, it's not good that you are good for yourself. It's good, but you need to effect change in society. You need to be a reformer in society.
Right. Now, I mean, this opens up a whole lot of questions in my mind. You know, one is the whole idea of the relativization of good deeds. You know, you find like in the West, for example, there is the idea that what you think is good might not necessarily be what I think is good. You know, you can go ahead and do whatever good deed you think is good, as long as you don't affect me, you know, and likewise myself with respect to you. So that's one aspect of it. I know you're talking also now about the idea of, you know, good deeds on a social level, right? But let's deal with the first one. What about this relativization aspect?
Look, like I said, you know, firstly, good deeds are instinctive. It has to be absolute, right? There has to be a point of reference, right? For example, who has a right to say what is right or what is lawful to eat and what is not? I mean, if there are no criteria that are set aside, how do we know what is right to eat and what is wrong to eat or what is not right to eat?
Well, you find in the West, for example, they might say what is right to eat is something that is, for example, organically grown. Right,
but
you know what's wrong to eat is something that has a lot of chemicals in it. I mean, they reduce it to you know, physical scientific criteria, right? Whereas in Islam, for example, they would have that aspect of not doing harm to your body, but at the same time, don't consume stolen products, for example. You know, don't consume things that you have gotten by you know, negative means, you know, and so on.
But you see, this is the issue, you know, when it comes to, for example, we're speaking about food, not that it's restricted to that, but when it comes to food, in the West, these things are constantly changing, right? What to eat and what you cannot eat. For example, you know, they would go to another society, like you had the problem in China recently with the SARS virus,
right?
It turns out that SARS virus came from these animals that they were eating, you know, these wild cats. Right. Similarly, we had the mad cow disease in the UK, you know, that they were trying to feed cows. They were mixing dead meat of animals that had died with fodder and feeding it to these cows with the hope of creating super cows, you know, again, coming into the whole economic, you know, try to more production and
right.
profits and so
which
forth.
Which I thought is good.
Mm-hmm. But these things are constantly being changed, you know. So there has to be some criteria that you live by. Therefore, I said there has to be a point of reference. When it comes to dress, for example, you know, 100 years ago, all right, we don't even need to go to 100 years ago. You look at some of these old movies that have been produced in Western societies and so forth. There you find the women are, you know, wearing long dresses and covered. And even today when they show documentaries about nuns and so forth, you know, that the way they are dressed, you would think that they are overdressed today. Right? But in modern society, these things are considered outdated. So who, you know, at which point we are to decide what is right and what is wrong, or who has the right to decide how a woman should dress and how not? What you have today are these designers in the West. They are calling the shots. They are saying, for example, you know, how much should we reveal and how much should we not?
Right.
You know, so there has to be some criteria. And if it's not going to be bound to criteria, a set of principles, and this is where Islam comes in, if it's not bound to that criteria and set of principles, it will lead to chaos.
Right.
You know, based on economic gain, based on production, based on, it could be the desires of somebody to see more women, more flesh of women revealed by the way they dress, and therefore we push it in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this relativization of good deeds in the West, it leads to a kind of a chaos, you're saying. It would lead to a kind of a moral chaos in the society. Now, my question is, does good deeds, can it be prioritized? Can it be prioritized? You were talking earlier on about, for example, let's say, for example, good deeds on an individual level and good deeds on a social level. Could we prioritize them? Are good deeds on an individual level, inferior to good deeds on a social level? But we just have to make a quick break for the news, and we'll be right back trying to answer these two questions. Stay tuned. Welcome back, and we're talking with Sheikh Safiullah Khan on the concept of good deeds in Islam, and could good deeds be prioritized? Are there levels among good deeds? And in that context, what is the relationship between individual good deeds and good deeds that have a social ramification? So what are your opinions on that?
Let me also say that good deeds is not something abstract. I mean, every act that you do, if it is within the confines of the legal framework, within the confines of the Sharia, if it is based on knowledge...
So the Sharia is the Islamic law.
Islamic law. If it is based on knowledge, if your intention is good, it's a good deed. Smiling at somebody is a good deed.
You're making me smile at you now. I'm doing a lot of good deeds right now.
For example, removing a stone from the path of people, removing a banana peel. People tend to slip on banana peels. Removing a banana peel from the pathway is a good deed. So, you know, we should not give the impression that good deeds is something that abstracts, it's something out of your daily living. No. Your very life, every part of your existence, if it is done, like I said, based on intention, righteous intention, based on knowledge, as well as based on belief, it's a good deed.
How about doing a good deed to yourself? Is that also within the...
Naturally.
I mean, feeding your own self, for
example. Naturally, we look at the fourfold existence that Islam speaks about. You have a responsibility, firstly, to yourself. You got to take care of yourself. If you take it on the basis that your body is trusted to you by the Almighty, then naturally you got to protect yourself. Right? You cannot let harm come to you. Naturally, these things also instinctive to human nature. You should not bring harm to yourself. You should not cause harm to yourself. So therefore, for example, you're looking at drinking, taking drugs, smoking, and so forth. You know, you should avoid these things. But further than that, when it comes to cleanliness, I mean, you look at the whole, the Sharia, the legal framework of Islam when it comes to individual. You got to clean yourself, purify yourself. You got to feed, you got to eat what is wholesome. Halal is not just a necessary, it's... halal is something that's allowed, but it also should be wholesome. I think, you know, just by the way, sometimes we think halal is just something that has to be slaughtered and so forth according to certain guidelines, but rather it should also be wholesome food. Some of the diet of Muslims could be halal, but it's not necessarily wholesome.
Right.
You know, so these things need to be taken into consideration. So things that you eat, the way you dress, the way you... fashion your lifestyle as an individual. If it's done in the right manner, in the proper manner, in its proper time and place, it's a good deed. Then again, you have the interaction with your fellow human beings. It has to be based on righteous actions. That's also good deeds. Then you have the responsibility to nature. For example, not littering, not causing harm to nature. When Islam speaks about not urinating in stagnant water, not urinating in the shady areas, not polluting environments. These are all good deeds. And foremost in this fourfold relationship is your relationship with the Creator. Naturally, your relationship with the Creator would regulate every other interaction. It's because of your consciousness of the Creator, your consciousness of your responsibility or your duty to yourself. Because of your consciousness of the Creator, you're conscious of your relationship with your fellow human beings, and similarly with the environment. So yes, you could do good deeds to yourself. Rather, your whole life, like I said, could be good deeds if it's based on those essential components that makes a good deed.
All right, now, so let's say, would feeding myself be on the same level as removing an obstacle in the way of society?
There are differences. There are differences. There's the individual act. I think we have the individual act, and then we have the, let's call it the social act, the right. Selfless act.
Right. Now, the individual act,
right. For example, is the doer and the aim. So, for example, if you eat, right, you're eating halal, and you're feeding yourself in order to continue living, right? This is for you, it's for your own good. Right? It does not affect anybody else. Right? But there's another act that you perform, for example, let's call it the social act. Right? There's the doer, there's an objective, but it goes beyond yourself. It creates waves in society. The impact of your act is more than yourself.
Right.
When you ate, it was restricted to yourself. I did not benefit from the food that you ate. But if you stand up for justice, if you confront tyranny, for example, the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Till today we are seeing the waves of this revolution. Till today we are seeing the impact of this revolution. When Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, stood up and confronted tyranny at that time, it was not restricted to himself. You cannot compare that. For example, that very act of Imam Khomeini, you cannot compare it to when he ate and when he slept. So there is a difference. There's the individual act. The impact that is very much restricted to yourself, but then you have the selfless act, you know, that it goes beyond the individual. In fact, it goes beyond generations. There are certain things that happen in the history of Islam, you know, that today it's reverberating in society. For example, you look at Karbala, right? I wanted to firstly give Karbala as an example of the evil in society, right? How many of us are aware that Imam Hussein was a victim of corruption and oppression in that time? He was a victim of oppression that existed in society. Yes, he confronted it, but eventually he was martyred. Well, I'm not going to go into the philosophy of that now. Similarly, you look at Musa alayhi salam. In spite of him being a prophet guided by Allah, but because of the disobedience of Bani Israel, the people, the children of Israel, when Allah made it haram, forbidden on them to enter the city for the next 40 years, Musa alayhi salam was a victim of that. You know? So this act now is not restricted, in spite of Musa being good, in spite of him being righteous, guided and everything. But he was a victim because of his society's disobedience. So coming back to what I was saying, for example, you look at regarding the issue of prioritizing. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, when did he set off for Karbala from Makkah? When the pilgrims were moving towards Arafah, the plains of Arafah, Imam Hussein moves in the opposite direction to Karbala. Are we going to say that the Imam did not perform Hajj? He had made the Fard Hajj, that is wajib, that is necessary. Hmm. But confronting tyranny at that time was more important than making Hajj.
So you have a priority.
Priority.
Here. Yes.
Right. So both are good deeds. Making Hajj is good. It's required. It could be compulsory. But confronting tyranny, confronting injustices, takes priority. Similarly, if you look at the establishment of the Islamic government, right? So similarly confronting tyranny, because you may be able to perform Hajj this year and the next year. You may be able to fast and perform prayers this year and the next year. But with the presence of a corrupt government and oppressive government in place, in existence, eventually this government could go to the extent of restricting your very practices as a Muslim. And therefore it's important to have it removed.
When we look at Muslim societies, in especially Muslim minority societies, but not only minority societies, even in Muslim societies today, we find that there are a lot of Muslims do not consider this particular important aspect of good deeds, social good deeds. You know, you find, like, for example, Muslim minorities in, for example, America, England, you know, France, these different parts of the world, they seem to be much more concerned about practicing individual good deeds, you know, or even good deeds within their own community, you know, establish halal meat stores and mosques and Husseiniyas and so forth and so on. But when it comes to speaking about the ills in their own society, when it comes to acting to remove ills in the wider society in which they live, you find them very, very quiet.
Look, I think, like I said, you know, looking at Surah Al-Asr, that salvation is not only to believe and do good deeds. That's not sufficient. You have to effect change. You have to encourage, enjoin good, enjoin rightfulness, and you have to enjoin, according to that verse, perseverance. Right? You have to. There has to be social interaction, right? Unfortunately, one of the problems that we have, you know, we being born as Muslims, or even people that become Muslims today, because we have not lived this transformation that Islam brought about, you know, from a jahiliyyah, ignorant period to the period of Islam, we have not really seen the effect or the impact that Islam is supposed to bring about. Well, maybe in Iran, because of the Islamic Revolution, you can compare to the pre-revolution Iranian society and the post-revolution Iranian society, you know, and you could maybe draw the differences. But the nature of Islam, in fact, when the nature of the Quran, you know, the Quran speaks about numerous topics, right? It speaks about history, it speaks about, you know, you could, there's a lot of scientific data that you could take from the Quran. It speaks about numerous topics, numerous aspects, but it deals with all these aspects to the extent that it contributes to the guidance of human society. The Quran essentially is a book of guidance. It is to guide human society. And the Quran says, Allahu waliyyu alladhina amanu yukhrijuhum min adh-dhulumati ila an-nur. Allah is the master of those who believe. He takes them from darkness to light. Even the Quran itself, when it says, hudan lin-nas, it is a guidance for humanity. And naturally, guidance is of many levels, right? There's hudan lil-muttaqin, there's hudan lin-nas, there's guidance for those that are righteous, and there's guidance for the general guidance. Right?
Yes.
But essentially, the nature of the Quran is to guide human society. And what is this guidance? It's not restricted only, like I said, if Muslims are really conscious of Islam, then this Quran has to bring about guidance in society. Not only in Muslim society. You know, unfortunately, it's like, you know, we sit with a blueprint. We are sitting with the prescription in our pocket. For ourselves as well as for human society. And for as long as we do not take up this prescription, read it and implement it, we would always remain sick.
So why are Muslims not fulfilling this particular obligation?
Let me give you an example. I was in South Africa last Ramadan, and it was a program on radio, and the interviewer asked me, he says, you know, we have this problem today that people are saying, for example, we should not take Islam into certain venues. For example, people that are drug addicts, people that are alcoholics and so forth. I said, you know, this is exactly contrary to what Islam is all about. This Islam is exactly for this. Islam is to change society. Islam is to transform this human individual. You know, if you look at Jahiliyyah, Arab society before Islam, and you look at the Islam, the society that was created by Islam, there is no better example. A society that was steeped into ignorance, a society that was steeped into class differences, you know, burying their daughters alive to the point that their sons could inherit their mothers and so forth. And it made them leaders in society. I think this is what is expected of Islam, or this is what is expected of the Quran. But for as long as we do not implement it, we do not bring it to the fore, we would always be weaklings in society.
Could we say that this moral malaise that Muslims are suffering in terms of not applying themselves to social change, for example, or improving society. Could this be because they have bought in to the prevailing materialistic point of view that your morals are relative to the belief system of the society? For example, the society says that religion should not get involved with politics, right? Religion should not get involved with, in some cases, social activism and so on. And Muslims are actually buying into this?
Look, what we find today, especially in so-called Western societies, I think one of the problem is, or one of the problems are, problem is that a lot of the Muslims that find themselves today in these societies, a lot of them are economic migrants. They have come there for a better life. So they don't want to upset the masters.
Right.
Whereas if you look at the present generation, the youth in these societies, it's a bit different. They are more, I would not say confrontational, but they're dealing more with these social issues because they are living that reality. Whereas the earlier generations, and unfortunately Islam has come down from them, they are more to protect what they have. They come from very undeveloped societies, and we need to protect what we've found in America. You know, so we don't want to go against the government. We don't want to become confrontational. You know, it's. Let me give you an example. In South Africa, in the heydays of apartheid, when oppression was steeped in society, South African society, I, growing up in that society and attending an institute which was the foremost institute in South Africa at that time for Islamic studies, our teachers, some of them very qualified, who taught in this institute, used to say to us, for as long as we can pray, we can fast, we can go for Hajj, we have no problem with this government. And yet it was a society that had dehumanized human societies for decades. We were ourselves were victims of that oppression, but we were not aware of it.
You know? Didn't want to become aware of it.
Both. Mm-hmm. There were those that were too scared to confront oppression. Now, I mean, if you look at where Islam is and where is oppression, look, where is Islam and where is the concept of one humanity, right? But yet you find the very propagators of religion are supporting terrorism, are supporting oppression, are living with oppression.
Right.
Right? And what the Quran says about oppression, I mean, the Quran speaks about six categories of oppressed societies, and there's only one category is that society, that oppressed society that confronts oppression will be in paradise. The five remaining oppressed societies in the Quran will all be doomed to hellfire for having not confronted it, for having benefited from it, and so forth. You know, so it's not strange. It's not strange that if we find Muslims that could be considered very religious, but very much are restricted to this individual act of righteousness, and not looking at the social aspects from it. And like I said, for as long as you are good, there could be hundreds of you, thousands of you. It is not sufficient.
Right. If you don't do anything for society, if you don't change your society or your environment and improve it, then it doesn't make any
Because evil
sense.
Is encroaching on you, and you're not immune to it. Evil is encroaching on you.
Right.
And it's a matter of time before you become a victim. Mm-hmm. And for as long as you're not prepared to confront that status quo, your society is not going to improve.
Right. So is this the reason why, for example, we have this belief in Islam, this principle in Islam of enjoining the right and forbidding the wrong?
Definitely, definitely. You know, I think, you know, the importance that the Quran attaches to it, if you look at some of the verses, or one verse where it says, Allah addresses the Muslim community, كُنْتُمْ خَيْرَ أُمَّةٍ أُخْرِجَتْ لِلنَّاسِ. You are the best society raised for humanity. What are your characteristics? It first says, تَأْمُرُونَ بِالْمَعْرُوفَ تَنْهَوْنَ عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ. You enjoin good and you forbid evil. And thereafter it says, وَتُؤْمِنُونَ بِاللَّهِ. You know, by right it should say that you believe in Allah, mm-hmm. because like I said, the fountain of good deeds, the cornerstone of the good that we do is based on our belief. But the Quran is saying, you first enjoin good, you forbid evil, and then you believe. In terms of priority, it should have been, you believe first.
Right.
What Mufassirin say that no.
Mufassirin are the commentators.
The commentators of the Quran, they are saying, no, Islam is prioritizing righteous, commanding good and forbidding evil. And therefore it has It introduces it before belief in Allah. Not to say that naturally it's not teaching concepts here, but rather prioritizing the importance of commanding good and forbidding evil. And the relationship that exists between belief and commanding good and forbidding evil. Like I said, you know, your belief, the actions that you do has to be seen on some front. You know, it's, you could be good, you could be a believer, you could be a practicing believer. But for as long as I cannot see that interpreted in your day-to-day actions, in your day-to-day interactions with human society, there's no good in your belief. There's no good in your good actions.
Now you talk a lot about the Quran. You mention a lot about the Quran in terms of how the Quran is talking and teaching about good deeds. What is the kind of methodology? What is the methodology that the Quran employs in terms of teaching people about the importance of good deeds?
Naturally, like I said, firstly it was instinctive. But then the Quran also goes further to give us examples. Right? We firstly find it in the historical, firstly the Quranic stories that we have. Numerous stories, you know, according to some exegesis of the Quran, they say something like 19 out of 30, a large percent, something like more than two-thirds of the Quran deals with history, speaking of the different communities and the different societies that existed. For the sole purpose, or one of the main purposes, is that we benefit from human existence. You know, we do not make the mistakes that other societies made. Secondly, when it comes to good deeds, Islam, regarding the historical aspect, it introduces a concept, and thereafter it gives us the role model, 99% of the time in the form of
a story.
A prophet.
Okay.
For example, the Quran says, وَأَمَّا السَّائِلَ فَلَا تَنْهَرُ. When it comes to the beggar, the person that is asking, you should not refuse him. You should not turn him away. That's the principle. And thereafter, the Quran gives an example in the case of Imam Ali alayhi salam. إِنَّمَا وَلِيُّكُمُ اللَّهُ وَرَسُولُهُ وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا الَّذِينَ يُقِيمُونَ الصَّلَاةَ وَيُؤْتُونَ الزَّكَاةَ وَهُمْ رَاكِعُونَ. That verily your masters are those. إِنَّمَا وَلِيُّكُمُ اللَّهُ. Verily your masters are Allah, the Prophet, those who believe, establish prayer and give zakat, give alms while they are in ruku.
While they are bowing down.
Bowing down.
Yes.
And this was revealed in the case of Imam Ali alayhi salam, where a poor person entered the mosque of the Prophet and he said, he explained his situation and then he said, is there somebody to assist me? And after a while he said, oh Allah, bear witness, I am the mosque of your Prophet and nobody is there to assist me. At that time Imam Ali alayhi salam raised his finger and offered the beggar his ring, you know. Now the beauty of the Quran is that you have the example, the rule, that when a person asks of you, you should not turn him away. But then you also have the example of Imam Ali alayhi salam, of giving his ring in alms. Another example, you look that the Quran says, وَأَمَّا الْيَتِيمَ فَلَا تَقْهَرُ. When it comes to the orphan, you should not be harsh to him. The case of Khidr alayhi salam, right? When وَأَمَّا الْجِدَارُ فَكَانِ لِغُلَامَيْنِ. The incident of Khidr and Musa alayhi salam, there's three incidents, but the last incident regarding the wall. The wall was about to collapse and Musa said that, you could have got Khidr alayhi salam resurrected it. And Musa said that if you want to
reconstruct it, the wall. Yeah.
You could have gotten money for it. But the Quran says, you know, the wall was for فَكَانَ لُغْلَامَيْنِ يَتِيمَيْنِ. It was for these two youth that were orphaned and Allah wanted to be good to them, you know. That Khidr implements this concept of the Quran, that when it comes to the orphan, you should not be harsh to him, but rather you should assist them. So you find that implemented in the case of Khidr. But let me give you a better example than this. Islam is fundamentally based on وَالَّذِينَ. There's a verse that says that belief in Allah and وَالَّذِينَ وَاجْتَنِبُوا الطَّاغُوتِ, and to confront all forms of oppression. Because oppression naturally, or oppressors are naturally confronting, or they are not confronting but rather denying people the right to believe. So it sort of diametrically opposed to belief in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That is fundamental in Islam. Belief in Allah and confronting oppressors. You look at Musa alayhi salam. The whole history of Musa alayhi salam is based on what? Promoting the existence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and confronting
oppression.
Fir'aun. Mm-hmm. You know? So you have the concept that established, and then you have the example of the life of Musa alayhi salam, which was, you know, that Allah sent him to a period of 40 years of training, and after that says to him, اذهب إلى فرعون إنه طغى. Go to Fir'aun, for he has transgressed. You know? So when it comes to righteous deeds, like I said, there's a concept that is established, and secondly, Islam gives us that role model in the form of generally prophets. Although you have the companions of the Kaf, for example, were not prophets, but rather they confronted a corrupt king, an oppressed society, and when they sought refuge in Allah, Allah gave them this refuge.
I want to thank you, because we're just out of time. I want to thank you for joining us here on Minbar with Sheikh Safiullah Khan. I want to remind you that if you have any questions, comments, please don't forget to write us at minbar@presstv.ir. That's minbar@presstv.ir. And remember, I think if there's one thing we learned from this particular conversation, is that good deeds have two components, basically the component that deals with the individual and the component that deals with the society. And if we do not apply good deeds to the benefit of society and to the reform of society, then we're not fulfilling our obligations. Thank you all for joining us, and until next week, we'll see you at the same time, same channel on Minbar.